Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Senior Editor Kelly Davio. As fee-for-service models give way to value-based healthcare delivery models, U.S. providers and patients alike can hopefully look forward to lower healthcare costs, increased quality of care, and improved outcomes. But what role will biosimilars have to play in value-based care? This week on the podcast, we're speaking with Jeffrey Scott, MD. He's the Chief Medical Officer of Integra Connect, a company that uses cloud-based technologies and services that help specialty care providers optimize their performance in the ongoing shift toward value-based models. Dr. Scott spoke with us about value-based contracting in the biosimilars context. Dr. Scott, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Not So Different.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
So for those of our listeners who may not be familiar with what value-based contracting is in the pharmaceutical context, can you give a brief overview of what we mean when we say outcomes-based contract or value-based contract?
Sure. In the marketplace today, and I'm more focused, frankly, on the community setting, there are many different contracts that are available to a community-based physician. Most of those contracts run through their group purchasing organization, and they're sort of what I would call the legacy type of contracts, which are contracts or discounts based upon committed volume, market share, total volume. Again, sort of the legacy drivers. There is a desire, especially as the costs of care have increased, to try and look at another way of contracting. That way of contracting we would call value-based. Now, value is what you get over what you pay for it. So clearly you could argue that bringing new innovative products to market that provide increased survival, lower toxicity, or value in itself. But I think what we're looking for is there a way to contract with industry that might allow us to, for example, innovative drugs, is there a way to build some price reduction in there so that when we look at total cost of care, there is less of an impact to our practice and the payers. So the key about value-based contracting would be trying to identify products that offer the best care or in the setting of multiple entities that have similar outcomes, contracting to drive down the cost, total cost of care by choosing the one that you get a contract on.
So what are some kinds of value-based contracts that we've seen so far in the oncology space, and are they having an impact on drug costs?
Well, to date, I would say on the community space, there's been very minimal impact. There have been a number of value-based contracts implemented in the VA. There are a number of models implemented outside the U.S. Some of those models perhaps looking at if the drug doesn't work within X days, then the cost might be mitigated. Some of the models looking at a total cost of drug over a year's time, irregardless of dose or duration. But in the community setting, there's a challenge to doing that. In the community, we deal with Part B and D, Medicare plans. The Part B, Medicare, for the injectable drugs, sets a market reimbursement at average selling price plus 6%. Short of a change in the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003 or a Medicare waiver, it would be a challenge for any value-based contract because any discount provided would impact the rest of the market by lowering the reimbursement because it would take ASP lower. COA, the Community Oncology Association, has put out a white paper and plan for what they call OCM 2.0, OCM being the current oncology care model. And in COA's plan for OCM 2.0, they call out that they have multiple drug manufacturers that are interested in setting up a value-based program with contracting but it would require specific legislative relief. So what do we have today? There are some contracts with payers. For example, CVS will force failure of a biosimilar Neulasta instead of the branded version. While corollary to that, United Healthcare has signed a deal that forces the physicians to use branded Neulasta. So I would assume that those are contracts at the payer that result in a lower cost to the payer. But among the community physicians, we do not have contracts that are based upon value today.
You mentioned the VA and some of the value-based contracts that are at play there. Can you expand on that a bit?
So, you know, the VA isn't going to share their contracts with me, but I have been involved on the other side as a consultant to industry. The VA is separate from Medicare. And the VA, unlike Medicare, interestingly, since they're both paid for by our taxes, the VA has the ability to negotiate prices with industry. And the prices paid to the VA and other DOD, the Department of Defense facilities, are not calculated as part of the average selling price. So this would allow the VA to lower cost of care through negotiations, since anything that they pay is related to the cost of drug, not a markup. So they would be the true beneficiary of any discount by reducing their cost. So pharma has approached them, again, I'm not privy to what's been signed and not signed, with contracts that somewhat mimic the international contracts, where there's either a maximum outlay per patient over a period of time, perhaps a guarantee that if it doesn't meet certain outcomes, there's either a waiver or reduction in the cost of drug. Both of those would be very enticing to a community physician as we're trying to lower our patients out of pocket and lower the total cost of care. But as of yet, I haven't seen those in the marketplace.
So do you believe there is a role for biosimilars in value-based contracting in the United States?
Yeah. I mean, the community marketplace, not only is it very fragmented, it's a little bit complicated. As a community physician, and I practiced for a number of years in the community, the margin on drugs, which today on a Medicare patient is probably 2 to 3% on the Medicare payment side, that funds much of what the practice does. So historic, what I say does, I mean, you know, operating the business, providing services for our patients, trying to treat them in an environment that they'd want to be treated in. Any contracting in the past has involved contracts that reduced the acquisition cost of the drug, which would actually provide some enhancement in that revenue to the practice. Now, those types of contracts, although they benefit practices and frankly, ultimately benefit the patients, because one could certainly argue that the current margin on Medicare drugs is not enough to fund the cost of the practice. Those payments, those discounts, contracts, et cetera, do not have a significant benefit to the payer. When I think of a value-based contract, I think of an opportunity for us not to just lower the acquisition cost to the practice, but commensurate to that, lower the cost that the payer has to pay. You know, typically from an industry, pharmaceutical or biotech industry, they're looking for the right drug, typically theirs, and the right patient at the right time, at the right dose, and for the right duration. So any types of relationships between a payer and maybe triangulated, a payer, the physician, and industry that would drive those principles, the right drug, the right patient, the right time, the right dose, and the right duration, I could see them being used for potential discounts to the insurer. I don't think that's necessarily just a biosimilar story. For example, you know, I'm not sure this is a good thing or a bad thing. Integra Connect, we have access and work with a number of the oncology care model practices. That group of practices, which today is probably about 1,200 of the 2,000 active oncology care model physicians. That gives us an interesting look at the true cost of cancer care and the breakdown of drugs and other services. The Medicare oncology care model is the only vehicle that I have access today that actually gives us a total cost of care by giving us the claims at all sites of care. What we found in our practices that the drug costs are now exceeding 60% of the total cost of care. Much of that increase in drug costs comes from the new immunotherapies. Those therapies are awesome from the perspective of patient care, where we're seeing new frontiers of survival in advanced lung cancer. We're seeing patients who've had failed every other therapy in colon cancer go into remission if they have certain characteristics. They're just fantastic. They're great for patients, but they're also contributing to this big growth in cost of care. Now, across the IO class, there are multiple drugs that appear to be similar. I think there's an opportunity for payers and the IO companies to start to have discussions, for example, that could lead to a preferred choice of therapy in exchange to a lower cost at the payer side. I believe the physicians would be willing to accept that because they're looking at patients who have significant out-of-pockets. They're also looking at the rising cost of their purchases of drugs. And I think if there's a way to maintain the physician margin while lowering the cost of care to the payer, there'll be a lot of interest in that contracts, in those types of contracts. So it'd be interesting to see if we can go beyond the biosimilars, which have been the obvious choice, and into therapeutics where the challenges and the growth of costs remain.
So what would be some of the features that we would really need to see in these contracts in order to make them feasible in the community setting?
And again, you have to look at the stakeholders. The physician wants what's right for the patient. You know, the physician whose practice requires margin to provide services would want to have margin that's in a similar range, although they'd probably accept a lower margin if the cost is down. They want to maintain access to their patients. You know, the patient wants access to the right drug for them. They don't want to get a drug that's not as good because it's lower priced. Obviously, the manufacturer wants to use their drug. So I could see features where, for example, in lung cancer, you have multiple IOs. You've got Keytruda from Merck. You've got Opdivo from BMS. You've got Tecentriq from Genentech. And you've got others from AZ and other manufacturers. The first three are all building a very compelling data story in non-small cell lung cancer. I could see a period of time where one contract could be, if you maximize share of a specific drug as an insurer by perhaps forcing failure first of one versus the others, there would be an additional discount/rebate provided to the insurance company, thus reducing the cost of care. From the physician, as long as the three of them are considered equal, I think they'd be open to those discussions, especially if they were kept close to home. On the Part D side, I think the physicians would welcome any type of relationships that might be able to address the donut hole. And is there a possibility of guaranteeing outcomes versus cost and the patient's out of pocket? Again, most of these things would take some type of legislative relief. But I mean, the goal would be either to maximize one drug share if they are all equal. You could look at another drug. There is a class of drugs that we might use in refractory Hodgkin's disease. It turns out that when we look at physician data, the duration of therapy is probably less than it should be. I could see a contracting strategy where we could partner, or they could partner with the payers, and if the payers could work with the practices to drive longer duration of treatment, not only would it drive better outcomes for the patients and save the payer money, but there could potentially be a rebate back to the payer, reducing their cost of care. Another interesting class that would be one that I would be targeting if I was looking at value-based contracting would be the CDK4/6 market, where Pfizer, Novartis, and Lilly have three outstanding drugs that appear to be very similar, albeit with some modest difference in toxicity. Each of these are used in the clinic, and again, an opportunity for a payer to contract with one of those three manufacturers to deliver share. And I think the list goes on and on. I mean, I think the key principles to me, and again, I'm in the sitting in the shoes or standing in the shoes of a community physician, is one, I'll never compromise on quality. I will only provide a therapy to my patients that I believe is the best therapy. The second thing is anything that can reduce the total cost of care and reduce the patient's burden is a good thing. So if these contracts reduce the patient's cost and provide the same opportunities as a patient outside the contract, that would be great. And then lastly, as that community physician, I want to maintain access to be able to dispense those in my practice and to maintain a fair margin so that I can continue to be in business and provide services to my practice. If the payers are able to drive those principles, quality, access, and choice of the best care, then I'm very willing to work with the payer if they can drive down their cost of care and hence the premiums to their customers through that type of contracting. Unfortunately, that's kind of nirvana, and in the real world, it's going to require some legislative relief and undoing some of the flaws in ASP that might prevent that.
Well, are there any final thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners?
I think it's a frontier outside DOD and the VA that in the international markets that hasn't really been walked upon in this country in oncology. I suspect there are many models, or could be many models, in the non-oncology world where most of the products are Part D and not Part B. In oncology, still about 60% of the products are in the Part B world. And because of ASP and best price, Medicare pricing, et cetera, these contracts have been limited. I think the physicians really would like to see ways to lower total cost of care. And if we can do that in the setting of maintaining a fair margin and access and allow the insurance companies to generate savings through these types of contracts, we'd be very open to it.
Well, Dr. Scott, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
You bet.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Not So Different. If you'd like to learn more about Integra Connect, visit our show notes. Remember, if you like the show, you can rate us at iTunes. Until next time, find us at centerforbiosimilars.com.